It proved that Freemasonry is a religion, and that it's a religion that worships the devil. So I'm going to get more into the why tonight of it. What I'm going to do is, I'm going to show you from the late 1700s until today, world events through the plan of a one-world government. I know a lot of people don't believe it, but we're going to read the scriptures, and the scriptures prophesy that in the end time, there'll be a one-world government, and all the earth will worship the beast. You know, that's a one-world government. So, again, in an hour and 15 minutes, an hour and 20 minutes, it's a lot of information to go through. So I'm not going to be able to thoroughly go through everything, but Petra or David or both of them are going to be handing out at the end stacks of paper to prove everything I'm saying. Because a lot of times people say, well, how do you know that's true? Or how do you know this is this? Well, the proof is there. And things can be looked up on the internet. So anything I say tonight is definitely provable. You know, it's not speculation. But I think after this lecture, a lot of things may make sense in your mind why things are going on. Like, when we hear people like Avi, Avi's giving us a lot of information, and it's like, wow, and it's truth, but sometimes you come out of a lecture like that and you're not understanding why. That's what I'm going to try to prove tonight. I'm going to try to prove the why of this. Where is that coming from? Okay. Here we go. Okay. I want to start in the late 1700s. There's certain time periods over the last 250 years and certain years, actually, that are major years in world events. That things have happened, and there, you know, a lot of things have happened in those years. 1947 is one of those years, as we'll get into when we get up this timeline. But in the 1770s, several things happened. We know America became a nation, you know, 1776. In the 1770s, there was a man by the name of Sheptai Zvi was a Jewish Messiah that was named the Messiah in the mid-1770s. And the Jewish people accepted him as a Messiah. And of course, he was a false Messiah. It didn't work out that way. But a band of these, they're called Sabbateans. And I always tell people, it has nothing to do with Sabbath. From Sheptai Zvi, they're called Sabbateans. But from these Sabbateans, all the way until today, a lot of what you're going to see is going on in world events today has to deal with the beliefs of these Sabbateans and Sheptai Zvi. Shimon Peres is a Sabbatean. John Kerry, whose name is John Cohen, is a Sabbatean. And what these Sabbateans believe is, they believe that Christianity, or really true believers like us, have perverted and changed the scriptures. And they believe that the scriptures actually say the opposite of what they say. They believe that anything goes. You know, that we're allowed to commit adultery, we're allowed to lie, we're allowed to steal. They believe in secularism. And as I get into, I'm going to get into modern Israel and how it became a nation and why it is today. And you'll understand why they're doing what they're doing today. It's because of the belief of the Sabbateans. It's a secular belief. And when they created the modern nation of Israel, as Avi said yesterday, the religious they killed, the communists they brought in. They wanted to make a secular state of Israel. That was the plan here. And there's a good reason for it, because they wanted to bring in a false Messiah for that. But they named him, and that's basically what they believe. They believe that the Bible was changed, and it's basically the difference, and it's all centered around sexual perversity. A lot of what the belief is centered around that. Now, very interesting. These people, these Sabbateans, who formed this group called Illuminati, I think everybody has probably heard that term before, Illuminati, which means enlightened ones, they formed this group, and then in the late 1700s, 1776, they merged with Freemasons. Freemasonry has been around for thousands of years in secret societies. But before that, Freemasonry was a secret society, but it wasn't really evil. It was pagan always, but it wasn't really evil. But once the Illuminati merged with Freemasons and the Jesuits at the same time, and the Jesuits are evil people. They're very evil people. There's a book by Tupper Saucy. As I go along, I'll mention certain things because we're going to be taping that if people want to get these references. But it's called Rulers of Evil. It's an excellent book to tell you about the Jesuits and their plan and how much influence they have in America. Big time. The whole plan of a new world was basically to, through financing, is to finance a one-world order. That was the plan of it. And that's why, like Avi said, there's two sides of Freemasonry. You have a York Rite and a Scottish Rite. The Scottish Rite are from the Europeans, and the York Rite were from France, who came to America, and that's why they called New York the New York Rite of Freemasonry. And New York was originally the capital of the United States until we got Washington, D.C., which, again, is not a state. It's a district. District of Columbia, you know, and I won't even get into that for now. But basically, that was important. Because also what happened in the late 1700s, the international bankers got involved with them. Actually, the early 1800s. So they had financing. So now they had the plan, they had the financing, they had the means, and they had the powers. And the international bankers, of course, are the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds. Once these all came together, that's where power really came in. And I'm just going to read, I got a few books here I'm going to read a little bit from, not a whole lot. One is what I think a lot of you are familiar with, Fossilized Customs. Just to give you a little background of how this started. And it says here, it says, the Order of the Illuminati was founded May 1st, 1776 by Dr. Adam Weishaupt. Born a Jew, he converted to Roman Catholicism and became a professor of canon law at the University of Ingolstadt in Bavaria. He became a Jesuit priest and then formed his own secret organization. Each candidate had to swear an oath to secrecy plus unconditional obedience to Weishaupt. One feature of their society was the most unusual system of mutual sabotage, espionage. Every member spied on every other member. When the novice was promoted to the mini-oval stage, a solemn initiation ceremony was performed. So you can see that was part of the whole thing, was secrecy and spying on each other and secret codes and all this stuff. Weishaupt wrote to his chief assistant Cato, he said, the most admirable thing of it is to call the great Protestant and Reformed theologians who belong to our order, who really believe they see in it the true and genuine mind of the Christian religion. Oh man, what cannot you be brought to believe? So part of their plan was to infiltrate different parts of society, work their way up, and take over these. Many people in this room were part of Worldwide Church of God. That's exactly what happened. If you look at what happened in Worldwide Church of God, back in the early 1970s, Herbert Armstrong wanted to build what he called the House of God at that time, which was the auditorium. Well, they didn't have the money. They borrowed $12 million from Chase Manhattan Bank in New York. Chase Manhattan Bank is owned by the Rockefellers. What they said was, because you don't have collateral, we need to put somebody in your church finance who can watch over our money. So comes in a man, Stanley Rader, 33rd degree B'nai B'rith Mason. Also comes in Robert Kuhn. The Kuhn family is one of the 10 families, international bankers on the Federal Reserve Bank. At the same time, a friend of this Stan Rader comes into Chicago, and his name is Joseph Tkach. Within 6 months, Joseph Tkach is brought to Pasadena. He's ordained an evangelist, and we know the rest of the story. Infiltrate, work their way to the top, take over the organization, and destroy it. And that's basically what they did over there. When Joseph Tkach was buried, he had a Masonic funeral. He wore a 33rd degree Mason ring, and they had bagpipes and the whole bit. So we can see as we get in here, and I get into some things that may be very shocking to you before we get to the end here, you'll understand why. That is the plan of how they work. Infiltration, disinformation. And that's why I say a lot of people that are into fanaticism with New World Order stuff, you're playing right into their hands. Because 75% of what's being told to you, whether it's internet or whatever, is disinformation. So to grab all this disinformation, never prove anything, and just go around telling everybody rumors, you're doing exactly their bidding. That's what they want. So then when none of it ever happens and it sounds so wild, nobody's ever going to believe anything any of us say. Because it's just wild-eyed speculation. So we want to make sure everything we're saying is factual, that you're able to prove it back. Now, very interesting, in the early 1800s, the Illuminati was outlawed. You know, some people say, well, if this is a plan, and why didn't they do it already? And this is why I'm explaining where it started from and how it came. And it took time. You know, the King of England, King George, they outlawed the Illuminati, and they killed a lot of these people. Whenever they were found, they were hung. And actually, the Catholic Church at that time separated from the Jesuits, and the Jesuits were bad people at that time. But it was only a backdoor way. They never really separated from the Jesuits. And again, the Jesuits are basically the CIA of the Catholic Church. And what is the main Jesuit training organization in America, university? Georgetown. Georgetown University. Who went to Georgetown University? Bill Clinton, and above a lot of other people over there. And some of Bill Clinton's top mentors are very, very high up in these things, you know, like he says. Now, very interesting, though, and I'll just read this over here. It says, on July 14th, 1889, Pike issued this statement, Albert Pike, who took over for Adam Weishaupt. It says, to the 23rd Supreme Council of the world, he said, that which we must say to the crowd is, we worship a God, but it is the God that one adores without superstition. To you, Sovereign Grand Inspectors General, we say this, that you may repeat it to the brethren of the 32nd and 31st and 30th degrees. The Masonic religion should be, by all of us initiates of the high degrees, maintained in the purity of the Luciferian doctrine. If Lucifer were not God, would Adonai illuminate him? Yes, Lucifer is God. I mean, this is serious stuff. So what they're saying is, and this is one of the reasons we don't like to use G-O-D today, the word God, because in this ecumenical movement, Allah is God, Vishnu is God, they're all God, and God is a title, you know. And before, I think when you said God, everyone knew what you were talking about. Today, when you say God, you know, it's very spurious what you mean. And that's why even when they pray, you know, think about it. On our dollar bill in America, it says, in God we trust. Well, if that God is Yahweh, the Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, then why wouldn't they put in Yahweh we trust? Would the American government ever allow that? Absolutely not. Would they allow to put in Yeshua we trust? Absolutely not. Because they know who the God is they're worshiping. And that's what I'm saying. You're saying in God we trust, and on the back of the dollar, you're having the all-seeing eye of Freemasonry. It's not that hard to figure out which one they're talking about. So now comes in something called the Manzini letter. And this was a letter that was written in the late 1800s that they laid out a plan through three world wars how they would bring in and usher in a world dominion, new world order. So the letter outlined three relatively simple strategies. It called for communism, fascism, and the struggle for the Middle East to foment three global wars and at least two major revolutions. World War I was to destroy the czarist government of Russia and replace it with militant atheism. World War II would begin by manipulating Great Britain and Germany to achieve a global war, which was done almost single-handedly by Adolf Hitler. World War III of the Manzini-Pike blueprint called for the firing up of the controversy between the Israeli and Muslim world. They hoped that the Zionists and the Muslims would destroy one another and bring the rest of the world into a final conflict. The Great Battle would usher in complete social, political, and economic chaos. To fill the void created by the Great Battle would come a world government headed by the Illuminati. An Illuminati doctrine, Lucifer is God, and Satan is heresy. So very clearly, now this is interesting. This is laid out back in the 1800s, and World War I and World War II were laid out perfectly. You know, first they take out all the czars and all the kings. Then World War II, they bring in this fascism, and they set up socialism on one side, or communism, and a so-called democracy on the other side. And now, when President Bush is going throughout the world bringing democracy to the world, and these are some catchphrases. Watch how many times he uses the word freedom. The Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor, okay, do you know where that comes from? Yeah, from France. And who gave? Bartholdi and another man, two 33rd degree Masons gave it. And it's from the god Libertas, the god, you know, of liberty. And that's the same one as Diana, is the same one as Semiramis. So literally, you know, they're worshiping this deity over there. So it's their god of freedom. So when they use these catchwords like freedom, you know, just like in the ecumenical movement, they use communion. You see these catchphrases that come from nowhere. And the interesting part about it is there really democracy coming to the world? Tell me one country that is really a democracy. Now, think about it logically. We have almost 300 million Americans in the United States. The last election, George Bush ran against John Kerry. What are the chances that both of them are involved in Freemasonry, both of them are skull and crossbones, which is a very, very select club of Freemasonry, and they're both related as third cousins? Actually, out of our 43 presidents, 37 or 38 were related. Bloodlines are very important in this, very, very important in this, to the point of being sick, you know, that these people believe that literally Yeshua never died. He went to France and married Mary Magdalene, and they believe they're the bloodline from him. They're called Rosicrucian. That's the name of it. But they believe it. This is where their belief is. And from these things, you know, what's scary about it, a lot of these people are very, very powerful world people. You know, so everyone knows there's globalists. Everyone knows it's about oil. But do they really know it's about Lucifer? Because that's what it comes down to. Anybody that's a 30-degree Mason or above has taken a vow to the devil. And that scares me. That the person who's running my country not only has taken a vow like that, but is also claiming maybe to be a Christian or this or that. You know, so it's very much deception that comes in here. Very, very much deception. And it's all based on secrecy and whatnot. So they lay out these three world wars. Well, another thing with World War I, you look at the problems coming today. You know, look at the problems that have come from Kosovo and Bosnia. It all gets down to going back to this time area where the Catholic Church was trying to get control of Jerusalem. And who have they been fighting with for the last 1,000 years to do that? The Muslims. The Catholic Church basically were the ones that supported Islam to start it. Muhammad's uncle was a Coptic Christian, and Muhammad, like Avi said, was illiterate. The guy didn't know up from down, and it was the uncle that was giving him all the information. And it was a way for them to backdoor to get the Catholic Church in here. Well, once Islam started and got stronger, they weren't following the rules of the Pope anymore, and then problems came. And then when they got really bad, the Crusaders came in to take it over. But then we know the Muslims came back in. Now, from the Turkish Empire, the Ottoman Empire from the 1500s, they controlled it until 1917, and then the British Freemasonry was able to get it back. See, everything has been about Jerusalem. Anything going on in the world, whether it's Iraq, whether it's anything, it's about Jerusalem. You know, because that's what, the same way we, our people, have lived for 2,000 years since the ascension of Yeshua, we've been waiting for his return. Every generation has been doing that, of true believers. These people are waiting for the return of their Messiah. You know, it's good and evil. Like I said, there's no such word as gray in Hebrew. It's one way or it's the other. So now they worked out World War I, they worked out World War II, and now the third plan is to bring a conflict between the Muslim world and the Christian world that will be so devastating, so horrible, so unbelievable, so many people dying, that everyone is waiting for someone to rise up out of that ashes. And we're very close to it, as you're going to see as we go along here. After World War II, if you look at the Catholic Church through the 1950 years that they, from the time of Yeshua, they persecuted true believers and Jewish people forever. I mean, every single historical record, this is not conjecture. They have persecuted and killed believers throughout all time. And during the Holocaust, the Pope, and I've seen pictures of it, I wish I had them with me, of the Pope with Hitler and these cardinals with Hitler. And after World War II, they took these people, they took these Nazis, they took them through the Vatican, they took them through these countries, they gave them false identification, and they helped them to get through. And they were never brought to account for it. So now that World War II ends, and you know, it's coming up, and now they're trying to create this new world government, what do? They need a new image. So what do? To unite that image, they get somebody who's real charismatic, who's real out there in society that everybody would like. In comes Billy Graham. But Billy Graham went to Catholic universities. He was coordinated by the Catholics. He's so involved with Catholicism, it's unbelievable, as many of the other ones are. But Billy Graham was there to unite the Protestants and the Catholics. And that's basically what has happened over the last 50 years. Everyone has forgot. You know, we're not forgetting the Holocaust, but we're forgetting who was behind the Holocaust. We certainly know about the Nazis, but everybody wants to forget what the Catholic Church did during this time. And they did way more than just, you know, moral support. They financed through the money, the banking, the whole bit. And even George Bush's father owned what was called Harriman and Company. And his father, not George Bush Sr.'s father, you know, George Bush Jr.'s grandfather, he basically financed Hitler in the Third Reich. You know, and all this is documented. There's no doubt about it. And they were going to bring him up on war crimes when he died. So, you know, a lot of this stuff is going on. But they knew from the very beginning that the key to a one-world government is a one-world religion. That's the key to it. And we're not far from that. See, people that abstain, if we want to be sanctified from that, we're looked at as hate mongers. You know, we're looked at as we're holding up world peace. And literally, laws are out there already. They may not be enforcing them completely, but in the United Nations, there are laws on the books today that if you say the only way to salvation is through Yeshua, that it's a hate crime. You know, that we are violating the human rights of another human being by not allowing their, you know, beliefs in these things. So now, we're into the late 1800s. They're starting to build power. Like I said, through the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, they're getting a lot of financing and they're building these things up through free trade, which was basically the reason why they wanted the New World. You know, the New World to create a New World Order. So through free trade, they're doing these things little by little, buying, controlling of political seats, and the international bankers are gaining more control. By the late 1800s, the Illuminati has enough control to start to envision a third temple for their deity Lucifer in Jerusalem. Now I just want to read another quote. And again, this is an excellent book. It says what everyone needs to know about Freemasonry. I got this when I was in Kenya. I can tell you the author and the ISB number if you want. And very, very like that movie, because I'm not into a lot of conspiracy stuff. I don't have time to read mounds of stuff. Just very simple what the beliefs are. They have the same way we have our Bible, they have what's called laws and dogmas. And if you read that, it's unbelievable what they say. And I'm going to just read you a quote from here. from their own law book of laws and dogmas of Freemasonry. It says, if Lucifer were not God, would Adonai, you know, Yahweh, whose deeds prove his cruelty, his perfidy and hatred of man, barbarism and repulsion for science, would Adonai and his priests culminate him? Yes, Lucifer is God, and unfortunately, Adonai, Yahweh, is also God. For the eternal law is that there is no light without shade, no beauty without ugliness, no white without black, no absolute can only exist as two gods. Darkness being necessary to light, to serve as its foil, as the pedestal, it's necessary to the statue, and the brake to the locomotive. That is why the intelligent disciples of Zoroaster, as well as after them the Gnostics, the Manichaeans, the Templars, have admitted as the only logical, metaphysical conception the system of a two divine principles fighting eternally, and one cannot believe the one is inferior in power to the other. Thus the doctrine of Satanism is heresy, and the true and pure philosophic religion is the belief in Lucifer, the equal of Adonai. But Lucifer, the god of light and god of good, is struggling for humanity against Yahweh Adonai, the god of darkness and evil. Now, if that doesn't scare you, I don't know what will. And there's people out there that say, I don't want to hear this, and this conspiracy, and this is a bunch of... It scares me to think that people that have the money, the means, and the power to accomplish it are believing this. And I'll tell you, sometimes they have more faith than we do. And it's very, very organized. There's committees and subcommittees and all these, and they meet together, and it's planned out like a corporation. You know, a lot of these people even are CEOs of corporations. You know, they run this thing. So it's a very, very defined plan. You know, it's not like people think it's two men in a little room pressing buttons controlling the world. You know, it's not like that at all. It's just like our government runs. There's panels and there's committees and subcommittees, and each one is responsible for something. But the bottom line is their goal is to worship their deity, who they're calling Lucifer, the same way our goal is to worship Yahweh. And like I said, all provable out of their own books. I'm only reading what they believe right here. So now, in the late 1800s, they're seeing this vision is starting to come about. And it's to the point where they can envision this temple in Jerusalem. So what they start to do, they start to finance for Jewish people to come back to the land. And like I said, but remember what type of Jewish people they want to come back to the land. They want secular Jewish people to come back to the land. They don't want religious people here. So they start this plan to bring secular people. And the way they do it is they start to finance the Jewish people. And if you look at that time, from let's say 1850 to 1900, this land we're in was called Palestine at that time. And if you said, if you were asking about a Palestinian, it would be a Jewish person living in this land. There were no such people as Arab Palestinians. A Palestinian was a Jewish person that lived in the land of Palestine because Israel wasn't a nation at that time. So what they started to do with what the Israelis that lived here, and there wasn't very many people. At 1900, there might have been even 100,000, 150,000, very, very few people. The land was desolate. It was the number one place in the world for malaria. Nobody wanted to come here. And I think Michal quoted Mark Twain today, what he said, you know, that at that time he came and you wouldn't even believe it was ever a country. You know, that's why there was no fighting over here. There was no reason to fight for it. So the way that they thought that they can build up for the Jewish people to come home, they started funneling them money for education. And what happened is the Jewish people went from being farmers and they started to become doctors and lawyers and professional people. Well, at that point you needed people to take care of the farms. Very poor world at that time. What happens? Arabs in Egypt, Arabs in Syria, Arabs in Lebanon, Iraq, Iran, they find out there's work here. They start migrating these poor people from these places to Israel to start doing these jobs, i.e. Palestinians. But there were no such peoples. They were just Arabs that were coming from other lands. So this thing of Palestinians having a homeland for 4,000 years, it's nothing but a lie. It's an absolute lie. And my question is, if the Palestinians had a homeland for 4,000 years, tell me one president they ever had beside Yasser Arafat. I mean, we could look in the Bible and we could see 40 kings of Israel. You know, we see all the kings of Judah. If they were in this land, show me a history. Show me anywhere in history where anybody was here doing anything. And it just wasn't so. There were Arabs living here, of course, but like I said, most of them were farmers and scattered. And at that time, there wasn't a problem with Jewish people. You know, even in Gaza. Do you know, with the Gaza withdrawal, 3,000 Palestinians worked for the Gaza people? And they were fine. There was no fighting with them. They gave them jobs, and that's the way it was. Villages next to each other, Arab and Jewish alike. Absolutely no infighting or nothing. All this that was here is created to bring World War III, and again, a fight between the West and the East. So now the next thing they have to do in the early 1900s, they got to get rid of the Ottoman Empire. You know, if the Ottoman Empire is controlling the Middle East, they're not going to be able to bring in this plan. They bring in World War I, take down the Ottoman Empire. Now, when you look at the Catholic Church being against Turkey coming into the EU, it has nothing to do with them being Muslim. It has to do with the Ottoman Empire and the Turks controlling this land here. You know, because the Catholic Church totally supports the Palestinians in absolutely every way. It doesn't matter what they do. You know, they totally support them. So the bottom line is they don't want the Arabs getting control again. But when you look, and this is a fact, in just about every major Arab nation, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, maybe not Iran, but most of the major Arab players, Egypt, all of the top imams, their top religious people, are all 30 and 33rd degree Masons. Totally. So that is the reason why all the politicians, you know, the King Abdullah of Jordan, you know, the Mubarak of Egypt, they're all part of it. They're all part of the same plan. Now, the people aren't, and that's why they use the people as pawns. And I feel bad for the Palestinian people, because they're being used as pawns in a game of chess for a certain reason. And whether it's Jew, Christian, or Muslim, they don't care about anybody. Everybody is collateral damage for the greater goal of bringing in this one world society. And once it comes in, they figure that, you know, at that point, whoever died, it's just collateral damage for a world that's going to be so wonderful and so great under their deity, Lucifer. And believe me, they're serious about it. They're very, very serious about it. Now, very interesting, World War I. The end of the Tsar's rule in Russia, that was another thing. They had to take down the monarchies to start bringing in so-called socialist governments in there. 1917, right at the end of World War I, was also when was created the False Mary appearance in Fatima. Probably everyone's heard of that, right? Now, what's very interesting about that, did you know that Fatima was the name of Muhammad's daughter? And they particularly did that because once the Tsarist empires fell down, they were trying to get all the Russians on their side over to Catholicism. So kill two birds with one stone. Have Mary appear and say all these things and have it appear in Fatima to put it in with Islam. So now they get the Muslims and they get the atheist Russians, or, you know, the actually Orthodox. At that point, they weren't atheists. Most of the Russians were Orthodox at that time. Try to get them all into the same mold. Like I said, at that point, Israel was a desolate land filled with malaria. The Turks completely destroyed it. Garbage everywhere like you wouldn't believe. No economy. And since 1948, over 120 million trees were planted in this land. With the Illuminati money, especially the House of Rothschild, the Jews in the land start to become very educated and political people. And then, like I said, we went over who these Palestinians really were. Now, there still were not enough Jews coming back to the land. The plan still wasn't working in a la World War II, bringing the Holocaust. Force the Jews out of their land and force them to come here and have no other choice. At the same rate, all the ones who are religious, all the ones who, you know, aren't going to be secular, they can get rid of. And that's just what Avi said. You know, and most of the people who were killed in the Holocaust were religious people. They did not want religious ones coming back to the land. And they funneled the land through these socialists. And that's the whole Labor Party today. If you look at the Labor Party in Israel, it's basically a communistic socialist party. And they don't believe in nothing. They believe in absolutely nothing. They use communism as a ploy to have a so-called evil to fight against. Because that's another thing. In this deception, there's always got to be an evil person. There's always got to be a Bin Laden, a Saddam Hussein, you know, somebody to rile the people to fight against while they're backdooring everything in. You know, and really when you think about it, just logically think about one thing. After September 11th, right? Now we have this evil, the next evil, Osama bin Laden, it's these terrorists, Al-Qaeda, right? That's our next enemy. Be logical. Since the year 2000, there's been over 60,000 terror attacks in Israel. Over 60,000. Now you're here, you see, you go down the block, there's army people with guns, there's blocking the streets, you cannot go into a restaurant without a soldier there checking you. They have the best military, the best surveillance, everything in the world, and there's been 60,000 terror attacks here since 2000. America is a porous country. They have no borders, no fences with Mexico. They have nobody guarding the shopping malls, the tunnels, the bridges. And since 9-1-1, there hasn't so much been one firecracker go off. And you're going to tell me it's good intelligence? Maybe part of it, but I don't believe it. I don't believe if there's thousands, like they're telling us, 10,000 sleeper cells all over America ready to destroy it, that these people are just waiting. The Arabs don't do that. They don't work that way. They're not very smart. That's why they don't. A lot of their things don't work out. If they can get you, they'll get you. If they can get you with a stick, they'll get you with a stick. If they can get you with a knife, they will, or a gun. But if they don't have the gun, they'll hit you with the stick. And they're not sitting in America waiting there for the last 5 years for some kind of big thing. It's not working that way. They use it as a ploy to scare the people. Just like Oklahoma City bombing. If you look at all the evidence there, the people were absolutely lied to. And the interesting part is, it's exactly what Hitler did before World War II. Blew up one of his own buildings, blame it on somebody else. It's, you know, the same old thing. And like I said, we have a video on Oklahoma City, and none of it adds up. If you watch the major news networks, you know, CBS, CNN, when it first happened, they were all saying that there were four bombs in that building that never went off. And how lucky we were that we found this, because there's a big terrorist network behind it, and then 3 hours later, it's one guy with a truck in front. What happened to the four bombs? The head it wasn't called Homeland Security at the time, but the head of the security in America, I heard him on the news say this. Well, we're having a hard time getting the survivors because of the other bombs that are still in the building. The governor of Oklahoma, I heard say the same thing, and I have it all on tape. And all of a sudden, boom, you know, 2 hours later, everything changes. Why? Because all the news, Associated Press, is all run by these people. It wasn't run by them in the late 1700s. It wasn't run by them in the early 1800s, but this is what I'm saying. By the early 1900s, and specifically 1933, very important year, they started to get full control over almost everything, and especially the media. People have probably heard of the Council of Foreign Relations. Has people heard of that? Council on Foreign Relations. Every single media person, almost, most media people, I wouldn't say 100%, but most, are part of Council on Foreign Relations. And they basically are going to tell what's told to them. So on TV, you're really just getting what they're telling you. You're not really getting the truth. And you have to be part of this Council on Foreign Relations if you want to be part of it. Well, what is Council on Foreign Relations? Council on Foreign Relations was created in 1947, same time the State of Israel, United Nations, NATO, World Bank, International Monetary Fund, all of it, 1947. You know, it was a major year in world events. And Council on Foreign Relations, what it was there to do is, they're an international think tank for making world laws. That's their job. So these are people that get together, they have committees, they write world laws for the UN. You know, and that's basically what they do. And report disinformation to us and tell us what they want us to know. That's where it goes to. 1933, President Roosevelt, 33rd degree Mason. I've seen pictures with his apron on. No doubt, he never denied it, actually. It's not hard to find that out. He gives full power to the Federal Reserve Bank. Now, the average American, what do they think the Federal Reserve Bank is? They think the Federal Reserve Bank is the United States bank that watches our money. Not true. Federal Reserve Bank are 10 international bankers that have nothing to do with the federal government. According to our Constitution as American citizens, it says only the United States government has the right to print and distribute money, and it has to be backed by some kind of, you know, gold, silver, whatever, some kind of real value asset. So here again, against everything the Constitution says, he gives full power to the Federal Reserve Bank to print and distribute money and lend it to the government. That's what our national debt is. You hear this thing, our national debt, our national debt. The national debt is that the Federal Reserve is printing money and lending it to the government. And then they're paying interest on it. For what reason? The government should be printing and distributing the own money according to our Constitution. Also, 1933, President Roosevelt put America in a state of emergency. Once the country becomes in a state of emergency, the president has the right to what's called sign executive orders. Through an executive order, you don't have to go through Congress, you don't have to go through Senate, you could sign anything into law. It supersedes almost anything. So now, since 1933, the very first act of every single president when they got into office was to continue that state of emergency that Franklin Delano Roosevelt put us into. And if you just look, go on the internet and look up executive orders and look how many presidents and how many executive orders were signed since 1933. You won't believe it. Thousands of them. You know, all kinds of things. To the point now where they can take your property. If the government feels that they need your property for whatever reason, they could just come in and take it. There's for energy. If there's some kind of crisis, they can take your energy. They can take your oil. They can take your gift. They can basically, on one crisis, one major hurricane, one major whatever, they can basically call martial law and take everything from anybody. You know, totally shut down the system through that. So So now he puts it into a state of emergency, and like I said, everyone has done that. Also, just about every single American president that I know of, except for possibly Abraham Lincoln, was a Freemason to some degree or another. And logically, you think to yourself, I was saying to my dad, because he said, I don't know about this stuff. I said, logically think to yourself, if every president was something, if they were a Boy Scout, you know, if they sold flowers, if every president was in something, every one, wouldn't you want to know what that was? You know, wouldn't you want to know what it is if everyone is involved in the same club? Wouldn't you have any interest to say something's illogical here? 0.1% of the country are involved in this club, and every president is involved in it. It's illogical. In a free country where, hey, the little poor black boy on the street can grow up to become president, that every president has come from the same club. And most of them even from the same family. Cousins and interwoven. It just does not sound logical that it would happen that way. So, you know, it's something that you have to think about. 1947, they vote to create a secular modern state of Israel and a state of Palestine, with Jerusalem being an international capital under UN control. You can go on the internet, read it. Read the UN resolution, and this is what they keep getting back to, that Israel has to go back to resolution, to the borders of resolution 242 and 338. They keep throwing it out. Go on the internet and look that up and read what it is. It was not to create a state of Israel. It was a two-state solution in 1948 to create a state of Israel along a state of Palestine. Basically, Palestine was going to be Jordan, part through the Jordan Valley, part of what's called the West Bank today in Gaza, and the Arabs refused it. They absolutely refused it and declared war on Israel the very next day. So now, 60 years later, all they keep doing is blaming Israel for everything and saying, if you only go back to those borders, that's all we want. And it's like, you could have had it 60 years ago. It's not about that. What it is about is making Israel's borders indefensible. That's what every war has been about. In every war, Yahweh has given them more land. And it's impossible that 5 million people can beat 1.3 million people in a war without Elohim fighting for them. It's just impossible. So every time, this is the first time with Gaza that Israel has actually just given up land unconditionally. Very first time. So like I said, when you look at, is everyone familiar with Oslo? The Oslo Agreement? 1992, they signed Oslo into agreement. Well, the Oslo Agreement states the same thing as 1947. A two-state solution. Two states side by side. Jerusalem is an international city with the Pope on the Temple Mount as the overseer. Same exact thing. And you know what's funny? They keep calling this the final solution. You know, even now they're saying we have to go to the final solution. Do you know where that comes from? That was exactly what Hitler said in World War II when he was going to exterminate the Jews. He called it the final solution. It's like the same plan that started with the Third Reich is exactly what they're doing now through the State of Israel. They are trying to make it defenseless so that they can absolutely destroy it. Now, 1947, like I said, big year. State of Israel becomes a nation. UN created to replace the failed League of Nations. International Monetary Fund, World Bank set up, NATO set up, all these things come. And I believe that is the beginning of the last generation, right at that time, with World War II. And I'm going to show you why in a minute. Let's go to the book of Daniel. And let's read about this last end time beast now that you have some background. Book of Daniel, chapter 7, verse 3. It says, and four great beasts came up from the sea, Daniel 7 and verse 3, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I watched until its wings were torn off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second like a bear. It was raised up on its side, and three ribs were in its mouth between its teeth. And they said, rise up, eat much flesh. After this I was looking, behold, another like a leopard, and it were given four wings of a bird on its side. And also to the beast were four heads, and rulership was given to it. And after this I was looking in the night visions, and behold, the fourth beast was frightening and terrible, terrifying and very strong. And to it were given iron teeth. It devoured and crushed, stamped what was left with its feet. And it was different from all the beasts before it, and it had 10 horns. And he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all the kingdoms, and shall devour the earth and trample it down and crush it. And the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings. They shall rise, and another shall rise after them, and shall be different than the first, and shall humble 3 kings. Now if we go to Revelation 13, we see the parallel of that in the New Testament. Revelation 13:1. And I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast coming out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on its horns ten crowns, and on its heads names of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like a leopard, had feet of a bear, and its mouth as a lion's mouth. And the dragon gave great power to it, to its throne and authority. And I saw one of its heads as having been slain to death, and its deadly wound was healed. And all the earth wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with it? And the mouth speaking great things and blasphemy was given to it to act with authority for 42 months. So, before we go on to the next scripture, let's write down what we have here. We have a lion with eagle's wings. You can write this down. This is the beast. We have a lion with eagle's wings. We have a leopard. We have a bear. And we have a dragon. Lion with eagle's wings, a leopard, a bear, and a dragon. Now, if we go to Daniel 2:31, before we get into who these people are, Daniel 2:31 says, You, O king, were seeing, because all this in Daniel is the same vision. We see a little bit different about each part of it, but it's all part of the same vision. He says, You, O king, were seeing, and behold, a certain great image. That great image stood before you with a brilliant brightness, and its form was dreadful. So what's the first thing we know here? It's one image with four parts to the image. The head of this image was of fine gold, its breast and its arms were silver, its belly and its thighs were bronze, its legs were of iron, its feet were partly of iron and partly of clay. And I think I'll stop there right now. So I want to make the point that here it is, you have one image with four parts. And the four parts are made up, you have a lion with eagle's wings, a leopard, a bear, and a dragon. Now in Revelation, the eagle's wings are plucked off. Now isn't it very interesting? What country represents the eagle? United States, right? What country in the world represents the lion? Great Britain. Isn't it kind of interesting that it says a lion with eagle's wings? If you look at all the wars since George Bush in 1991 officially announced at the United Nations, first time when it was openly announced that this is a new world order where diverse nations will work together toward a global plan of a one world government. Announced it right in the United Nations. Since that time, every war we've had, whether it's Kosovo, whether it's Bosnia, whether it's Afghanistan, whether it's Iraq, have all been air assaults with American Britain at the top of it. Lion with eagle's wings. The leopard, France. That's their symbol. The bear. Who's the bear? Russia. And who's the dragon? China. Now, isn't it very interesting that this United Nations that's created, who are the five permanent members of the United Nations Security Council? England and France. The five people that's named right here. Now it says there's one beast with five parts to it. Now what did I just read here? I said the legs were part of iron and the feet were part of clay. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, as much as iron crushes and smashes things. And the iron that shatters all these things will crush and shatter. And as to you that saw, the feet and the toes were partly of clay and partly of iron. The kingdom shall be divided. That there shall be in the strength of iron, because you saw the iron mixed with clay of the potter. And the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay. So the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. And as you saw the iron mixed with the clay of the clay, they shall be mixed with the seed of men. But they do not adhere to one another, even as iron does not mix with clay. So here it is. We have the feet of this beast, partly of iron, partly of clay. And yet, like it says, is iron don't mix with clay? They're not going to mix together. But what is the iron and clay? The seed of man. Very interesting. A meeting happened after World War II to divide up Europe. It happened between Eisenhower and Khrushchev. Now, very interesting. Eisenhower means iron. Khrushchev means clay. That's exactly what their names mean. They divided up Europe, partly communist, partly socialist. The same way, there'll be the seed of men, and iron doesn't mix with clay, they don't mix together. Until the taking down of the Berlin Wall, they never mixed. It was the same thing. So I find that more than just a coincidence, that at the starting point of this end time, that exactly like Scripture says, it would come that way. Now, I'm claiming that the United Nations is the end time beast, the last beast. But we know the United Nations is nothing. It doesn't have any power. You know, like it says, they give their power unto the beast for an hour. The United Nations is a shell for somebody or something. Now, it's interesting also, it says that it has ten horns and seven heads. Now, if you look at the United Nations, they have five permanent members. They have a rotating president, and they have a secretary general. They have five heads, and they have 10 horns. There's 10 rotating members from Brazil to the littlest country, and those 10 members will never vote against the five permanent members. Never. You saw that with Iraq. Matter of fact, the 10 didn't know what to do because the five were fighting. But they will never go. They give their power unto the beast for an hour. But like I said, the United Nations is nothing but a shell. I'm not going to go there, but Revelation 17, there's a woman riding the beast. And I believe that woman is Babylon, which I believe to be America for many reasons. We have tapes on it. I'm not going to get into it. But it says that the beast hates the whore and destroys her. And I believe this is the deadly wound that it's talking about. And a matter of fact, I heard it with my own ears. When America went to war against the United Nations, Kofi Annan came on TV. He said, this is a deadly wound that we might not be able to heal. And what happens? The 10 horns hate Babylon, and they turn it and destroy her. You got to understand, Babylon and the beast are two different entities. Babylon rides the beast, but the beast hates Babylon and destroys her. And then Europe, who is going to be the major player in this, so like I said, the UN, when we're saying it, the UN is just a code name for the whole one world government. But right now it's America who's at the helm, and Europe is going to be the one in the end time. And it gets back to York Rite and Scottish Rite. And both of them want the control of it. And the deadly wound will be healed. I mean, America is going to go down. Their sovereignty will go down. And it could be through anything. It can be through a dirty bomb. It could be through nuclear war. It could be through something like Katrina. Something will happen that, believe me, America will not be the way they are today. And the UN will come in there on our streets, and the people will be clapping for them. Because, oh, the UN's here to help us, and the UN's here to save us. And believe me, it's not that far down the line that this is going to happen. Let's go to Psalm 102. Because I just want to prove to you that we are in the last generation. And that this was the beginning of that generation. Now, I went into this before. I'm not going to go into again the beginning of Psalm 102. I believe clearly is talking about the Holocaust. You know, verse 3, for my days are consumed in smoke and my bones are burned as a hearth. Clearly, if you go through that, you'll see it's talking about the Holocaust. And then very interesting, if you drop down to verse 13, it says, thou shalt arise and have mercy upon Zion, for the time to favor her, yea, the set time, literally it's Moab, is come. So there was a set time that the Father would give favor to Judah, and it was after the Holocaust. We went over that the other day in the last Exodus, you know, that how they came. So, and then it says, in verse 15, so the heathen shall fear the name of Yahweh and all the kings of the earth the glory. When Yahweh shall build up Zion, he shall appear in his glory. Very clearly. We went around today. You saw how little Zion was when it was first made, and you see how big it is today. It's never been this big. There's never been this many people living in here. And then look at verse 18. This shall be written for the last generation. Very clearly. In the Hebrew, Leador Acharon, literally means the last generation. So he says, when Yahweh builds up Zion, the Messiah will appear, and this is written for the last generation. What did Yeshua say? Watch the fig tree. Who's the fig tree? Israel. When you see the leaves sprout, know the time is close. So clearly, from this time, from somewhere around World War II that started the last generation, anywhere from 1940 to 1947 when this started, we are in the last generation. No doubt. Yahweh's word says that. He says, when Zion is rebuilt, the Messiah will appear, and I'm writing this to the last generation. Just like the Apostle Paul said. You know, he said about the thief in the night thing. He said, but you're not in darkness that the day will come on you unaware. So he's telling us exactly of those times and when they're coming. So here it is. We're pretty far along in that generation. Because Yeshua also said, this generation will not pass till all these things happen. There will be people who survived through the Holocaust, who went through that hell, and saw Zion built up, that will be alive when the Messiah appears. They will be the witness of it. So we're that close. We're getting that close to it. Now, since 1948, what started happening in America? Now that they had all these things, IMF, World Bank, all these things set up, through money they started to buy election after election after election. And that's the way they do it. I forget who was saying it in the bus, but might have been Walter. Somebody said, you know, they asked to be a Freemason. If you didn't want to do it, they never asked you again, and you never moved up. And that's literally what happened. It went from governor levels in higher places to smaller levels to towns and committees, and that's what started to happen. Because face it, money can do anything. You know, if you look after the Gulf War I, George Bush Sr. had a 91 approval rate. Within a few months, he lost the election. And people didn't know why. It was just everything you heard was Bush bad. Bush bad. Bush bad. And they asked people, who did you vote for? Bush bad. They didn't even know. Well, tell me, why did you vote for Clinton? Bush bad. But what did Clinton, why did you like Clinton? Bush bad. That's all they knew. And through television, through the false prophet, the one-eyed monster, they can make you believe anything. Part of it is sound waves that work with your mind, and part of it is conditioning. If you're told a lie long enough, you're going to believe it. So absolutely any election, they could make you vote for who they want you to. People don't have time to look into the candidates and see these things. Basically, whoever is told, they're going to vote. And that's the logic is when you look at the polls. How can one day the poll be one way and one day the other way? How can people switch so quickly? Because whatever's being told to them, they're going to do. And that's what they started to do. So people, through money, little by little, they started buying seat after seat after seat. And it's at to a point now where they're controlling almost every spot in government and whatnot. 1980s come along. Important part of this. Ronald Reagan, who when he became president was not involved with Freemasonry, but think about it. President of the United States, probably the most important and busiest man in the world, while he was president, found time to become an honorary 33rd degree Mason. And it's just a social club, just for playing golf on Sundays, right? Illogical. Why would somebody take the time to do that while they're president of the United States unless there's a meaning to it? But he did. He did. He was not a Freemason when he became president, but did become a 33rd degree Mason while he was there. Mikhail Gorbachev, also very, very high-ranking globalist. They start the reunification of Europe because, again, Europe is prophesied to control the beast in the end times, so without Europe being unified, the end time can't come. What do? Take down the Iron Curtain. Unite the two together. And once they do that, what they did was they had a whole system now from communism that was used to taking orders, and they blend it with this socialism, and they create something they're calling democracy, but it's not. And it's actually by blending the two together under a one-world system, it's worse than anything. It's fascism is really what we're under. Because face it, in the last election, you know, they'll say, oh, you have the freedom to this and that. And I saw it with my own eyes. There were people that were protesting against President Bush without doing anything, not with, you know, doing anything violent or anything, just by holding signs, and I saw it on Fox News, against abortion, and they were put in prison, and I think it was 47 years they were given them for that. I mean, where is our freedom? Where is our right to protest? And that's what it is. You have a right to freedom as long as you agree with the establishment. And we went to the Holocaust Museum today, and like I said, this is sobering because it's coming. As long as you take the mark of the beast and you go with the establishment, you will have no problem whatsoever. But if you stand up to it, it's probably going to mean your life. We're in very, very serious times, and it's everywhere. So now, the Unite Europe, a lot of things start to happen. They start setting up in the late 80s with world stock markets from the beginning of the 80s and whatnot. There was very few stock markets in the world. London, U.S., now almost every country has a stock market. Every country just about on earth, even Israel, has a stock market. So they start bringing these what they call free market societies. Then they bring in NAFTA and GATT, which is supposed to be, you know, help world trade and all this stuff that now we can, American companies don't have to make their things in America, they can make them overseas. So what happens? We have poor little children in Mexico working 14 and 16 hours a day for 10 cents an hour so that we can wear nice Nike shirts and all these other things. But hey, you know, why not? You know, we like nice clothing. But all these things just coming toward that stuff. They have wars such as Iraq, Kosovo, Bosnia, because they're trying to destroy any government on earth that is not with them. And like I said, if you look in Kosovo and Bosnia, clearly if you look at the history, they were trying to destroy the Eastern Orthodox Church that has been at odds with the Catholics ever since Constantinople. You know, they've both been vying for that power within the pagan world. And the Catholics basically have it, so now that they're strong, they want to destroy. And it's interesting, because in Rulers of Evil, he says the Catholic motto, and it's almost like the Muslims, it's not much different. When we're weak, we join with them. When we're strong, we destroy them. You know, that's basically the way they believe. So they're doing the same exact things. Like I said, 1992, George Bush Sr. for the first time announces publicly at the UN a new world order. September 11th changes the world for the globalists. You know, before that, if you remember in the 90s, there were these militias, and they made it sound like all the militias were these crazy people, these Montana people with guns that, you know, you're going to have to get us down. Where, honestly, if you look at the militias, 90% of them were ex-military policemen, firemen, people in the community that just wanted to hold on to their Second Amendment right. They said, you're not going to take our rights away. They were not wild-eyed, crazy people. And Oklahoma City changed all that. Because once you get one nut that they made look like did this, everyone dropped out. They said, we don't want to be associated with fanaticism. So they solved that problem real quick. But September 11 changes the world. Because now we got another one to fight against. We got to do something real quick. And what's interesting is, the very first thing they do after one of these attacks is bring legislature. The very first thing. The day after September 11th, they're in the Congress saying, we have to make anti-terror laws. You know, we have to make these laws, and we have to take... Now, who are the terrorists? Is it us, the citizens? We're the only ones getting laws made against us. We're the only ones that are getting our rights taken away from. You know, it's not logical, but again, that's the disinformation of all this. And they prepare everyone's mind, condition them for one world government. Now, there's one thing that has thrown a monkey wrench into this whole plan. One thing has thrown a monkey wrench in the plan. They never expected Israel to build up a religious Zionism again. Because again, the Sabbatean plan is a secular nation. And when the settler movement started, they didn't know what to do. See, they didn't have that much control at that time. And they couldn't do it. And now they do have it. Now they're saying, what are we going to do? They know there's a short window of opportunity. Because it's growing so fast, if they don't stop the settlers now, they won't be able to stop them. You know, too many people, like Avi said, too many are starting to come back to Yahweh and come back to Scripture. So the settler movement and true Zionism and true people like us that believe in Scripture are the most hated people by the globalists and the Sabbateans in the world. We are the one thing that's stopping what they want to do. Because basically to the whole world, they don't care. The average person on the street, they'll go along with it. They're already totally brainwashed a whole generation. And our children, forget about it. You better watch your kids, especially through music, because they have that young generation in the world, and sorry to say, a lot of even the believers' kids. Watch who your kids are with. Watch who their friends are, and watch what they're doing. You know, because they have sucked the mind out of these kids through video games, through television, through public school system. It's horrible. And our young ones really don't stand a chance. We have to claim them back. You know, we really have to claim our young ones back. But Zionism has stopped it. Now, Revelation 2, 9 and 10, who is it to? It's to the Church of Smyrna, right? To the Church of Smyrna. What does he say? He says, I say to them who say they are Jews but are not of the synagogue of Satan. Now, very interesting. Sheptai Tzvi, who was the false Messiah, the first Sabbatean, you'll never guess where he was born. Smyrna. So here he is, he's saying to the Smyrnans, to those who say they are Jews or not, but are the synagogue of Satan. You'll never guess where he was coronated, false Messiah, as king. Gaza. Why did Shimon Peres say Gaza first? Because that's where their king was coronated. False Messiah, Sheptai Tzvi. What does Peres mean? His name means divider. So all these things are for a reason. There's a reason why he said it's got to be Gaza first. That was the exact place where they coronated Sheptai Tzvi as the false Messiah in the late 1700s. This is what's behind creating a Palestinian state. It's there to destroy the state of Israel and the true believers. It's there to make Israel indefensible at their borders. Since Israel is pulled out of Gaza, within the first 3 days of that pullout, they got enough weapons that would have taken them, they said, like 5 to 10 years to smuggle in. And it's still happening every day. Back and forth, thousands of people. And what's coming up probably after the election in January, it's going to be ugly. It's not going to be suicide bombers on buses, although you may see a few of them. It's going to be missiles and rockets to Israeli citizens. And what's going to happen? Of course, Israel's going to have to hit back hard, right? It's all part of the plan. Sharon is involved. We had Barry Chemish here last year. Sharon's a 33rd degree Mason. He's involved as much as the rest of them. And that's what they want to do. They want to put so much hatred on each side that they get all these people hating each other enough to bring the world war on. Well, really, the enemy is not the Palestinians and the enemies aren't the Jews. The enemies are the globalists who are indoctrinating these people. And I try to tell that. I try to tell it to them. They are being used as pawns. Do you realize that they set these people up in cages there in Gaza, in West Bank? They have never left there in their life for the last 37, 38 years. All they infiltrate them is that Jews are animals and pigs and dogs, that they took your land. Do you see other people around the earth sticking dynamite on themselves and blowing themselves up? No. Because they've taken these people, they can't get out of there, they have no passports, they have no citizenship, so they've kept them there and indoctrinated them that, you know, if you kill yourself, you'll have 70 virgins in heaven, and all this other stuff. And they won't let them out because people may tell them the truth. And all they see is Palestinian TV saying the same thing over and over. And suddenly I'm going to show you a film, it's called Relentless, all about the Oslo Agreement. It's shocking when you see it. and a lot of the stuff that happened. It's a real interesting film. But that's what it's all about, to create World War III here in the Middle East. A World War III that will be so horrific that the world is going to think it's the Great Tribulation. You could have 1 to 2 billion people dying. And they're saying it already. You keep hearing this stuff of we have to get rid of nuclear weapons. We have to get rid of nuclear weapons. Well, after this war that's going to be so horrific, so devastating, that's going to bring America down to its knees, the whole world is going to meet somewhere under the United Nations, and what they're going to say is we can never have it again. And you're going to see every nation, including America and Russia, saying we will get rid of every last nuclear weapon. And they will melt them into plowshares, literally, and they're going to say this is the millennium. And whoever it is, whoever this anti-Messiah is, whoever this political figure is, he is going to be at the head of it. And it's going to look like he's bringing peace. He's going to sign a deal here in Israel. They're going to make a Palestinian state. Everyone's going to be happy, except for those evil people like us who are saying, no, we don't agree with this. And even after war, even after 2 billion people, when is it going to take you to learn? You don't want peace. And what you'll hear is that we're fanatics, you know, being taken to, you know, reprogramming camps because we're fanatics. They'll make every kind of lie and disinformation about you and everything else. And that's the key to it. And people are going to think the millennium came. When you want to know something, didn't even start. It's the time of sorrows. It's the beginning of woes. It didn't even start. Very interesting. This summer, America has built a 25-mile square military base in Tel Aviv at the old airport. U.S. flag on it. It's an American base there. Now, what's interesting is, I wondered, why on earth is Israel building a new airport? The old airport isn't old, but again, they need a place to bring the planes in. It's not in the papers, not, you know, hasn't been publicized, but we know people personally who have gone there. They've taken pictures. I've seen them, and it's there. And they are very close, planning on going into Syria. That's the next step. And it's not that far off. What's going to happen from there, who knows? You know, because Hezbollah has 12,000 missiles at the border, and if America goes in there, you know they're going to bomb Israel. And then, of course, Israel's going to hit harder, and then they're going to hit harder. You know, it's anything to promote this World War III. So America's built this base there, and all intelligence, even on the regular news, it said Sharon and Bush has met several times this year, that they said they're expecting a regional war in the Middle East in the next 1 to 2 years. And that's why I say, being here this year, this is a really, really important year. Because I know we live here. We'll be here one way or another. You know, if I could crawl here, I'll get here next year to Jerusalem. But people may not be able to travel. I don't know. It might not happen for 2 or 3 years. I'm not putting a time frame on it, you know. But the key is, while you have the opportunity to come, you know, praise Yahweh that you took advantage of it. But it is close. It's not that far down the line. All the chips are in place, and they're very close to bringing this stuff about. Clearly, we have to stick to Scripture, or we're going to be deceived, without a shadow of a doubt. When Israel goes down, many people are going to lose their faith. Because like Avi said, there's so many Christians out there that Israel can do no wrong, you know, and that nothing ever bad will happen. They're not reading the Bible. Read the first 23 chapters of Jeremiah. It all talks about destruction of Israel and Jerusalem in the end time. It is going to happen. It absolutely is. There's going to be a cleansing in the land, and 2/3 are going to die, and another 1/3 are going to be purified through it. Just walk in the streets and look out there. It's no different than New York City. You know, it's a cesspool. But Yahweh has brought them back, like Ezekiel 36 says, in their sins, so he will get the glory. And some of them will come to him and get clean waters of baptism, but many people are going to perish. It's sad, but it's true, and that's why we need to be out there with these people. 2 Thessalonians 2:10-12 says we must love the truth. Because they love not the truth, I'll send them strong delusion that they'll believe a lie and perish in, you know, in their unrighteousness. And I always say, you can't be a truth seeker, you have to be a truth lover. You have to be a truth lover. Now, I want to go over one more thing before we end, and this is going to take a few minutes. Has anybody ever heard of the Council on National Policy? Council on National Policy. Because where does religion play into all this? We could see the political side of it very easy. We know almost every politician is involved in Masonry and all this stuff. But where does the religious end come into it? Well, there's something called the Council on National Policy, and what the Council on National Policy is, they are the internal U.S. think tank for making internal laws in America. They're like the Council on Foreign Relations does it international. The Council on National Policy makes all the laws in America. Now, what laws have been coming out in America over the last 5-10 years? Same-sex marriages, legalization of partial birth abortion, you know, homosexuality be legal. So we see these are the laws that these people are making. If you look at the biographies of the CNP members, past and present, you'll find out that these people, here's their resume. They belong to groups such as Knights of Malta, Council on Foreign Relations, Unification Church of Sun Yung Moon, the Church of Scientology, Freemasonry, the CIA, Nazis, the Church Universal and Triumphant, Ku Klux Klan, Mount Templar, racist and other cults organization. And this is right in their biographies. We have in America what's called the Freedom of Information Act, and anybody that's running for public office has to put a biography. And they don't usually hide these. They don't publicize it. You know, I heard even on Tim Russert, when President Bush was running for president, they asked him and the other guy, Cohen, Kerry, about the skull and crossbones. And they joked about it and just made a joke, but they didn't deny that they were in it. So this is the background of the people who are making the policy in our country. So no wonder why this policy is coming out the way it is. They have six permanent committees. One is on the family, one is on law and justice, one is on economics, one is on defense and foreign policy, one is on institutional reform, and one is on the environment. So again, this is what I'm saying. It's not just like three guys getting together and talking about it. There are internal committees, you know, like corporations and subcommittees, and they're making laws in our country on all these different things. And that's where it's coming from. Just the same as Freemasonry, the meetings are closed, they don't tell you where to meet, they're not allowed to say anything about it, all the same rigmarole as it happens every other time. Now, I was wondering, well, who are these people? Who are these people that are members on the Council of National Policy? Who are the people that are making the laws for homosexuals and all the other things in our country? Well, I found out. I'll give you a list of some of the people. John Ashcroft, you know, former Attorney General. Tommy Thompson, Health and Human Services Secretary. Tom DeLay, Speaker of the House. Trent Lott, Edwin Meese, former Secretary of State. Gary Bauer, Congressman. John Kyle, Congressman. Oliver North. John Taylor from the Virginia Institute for Public Policy. It doesn't surprise you, right? You know. And then you get down, Jeffy Helms, 33rd degree Mason. Jack Kent, 33rd degree Mason. Rick DeVoy from Amway, 33rd degree Mason is part of this. Holland Kors from Kors Brewery. Sam Moore, 33rd degree Mason. He's the president of Thomas Nelson Publishers. Powerful politicians, powerful businessmen. Thomas Nelson is one of the biggest publishers in America. But here we see, these are the people now. Powerful politicians, powerful businessmen. Then I found another group of people that are part of this. Very interesting. Tim and Beverly LaHaye. Tim LaHaye is the founder on Council on National Policy. Remember the Left Behind books? He's one of the people doing this. Ralph Reed from the Christian Coalition. Pat Robinson from the 700 Club. Bill Bright, Campus Crusade for Christ. David Breese, host of The King is Coming. James Dobson, Focus on the Family. Jerry Fordwell, Bob Jones, James Kennedy, Chuck Missler, Robert Schuller, John Enkeberg, Sun Yung Moon. Sun Yung Moon. These are the people that are legalizing sodomy and abortion without the parents' consent. What's going on here? Now, something else that's going to... Last June, something very interesting happened in our Congress. Now, you know our Congress wants to what? Separate church and state, right? They want to separate church and state. Well, in our Congress, what happened was, there was a coronation of the Messiah on June 13th, 2004. You can pass this picture around. Sun Yung Moon. Our Congress of the United States coronated him as the Messiah under the Council on National Policy. I'm just going to stop this for a second because... And I made copies of all this for you, so you're going to take them with you, because this is too much to believe. June 21st, 2004, it says, you probably imagine your congressman hard at work in the Capitol debating legislation, making laws, you know, governing. But your newspaper probably didn't tell you that one night in March, members of Congress hosted a crowning ritual for an ex-convict and multi-billionaire who dressed up in maroon robes and declared himself the Messiah of the Second Coming. On March 23rd, the Dirksen Senate Office Building was the scene of a coronation ceremony for Reverend Sun Yung Moon, owner of the conservative Washington Times newspaper and UPI wire service. Moon owns these things. Where's your news coming from? Who was given a bejeweled crown by Representative Danny K. Davis from Illinois afterwards. Moon told his bipartisan audience of Washington power players he would save everyone on earth as he did save the souls of Hitler and Stalin, the murderous dictators who had been born again through him, he said. In a vision, Moon said the reformed Hitler and Stalin vouched for him, calling him none other than humanity's savior, Messiah, returning Lord and true parent. And he went on a thing all around the churches. It's called Destroying the Cross. And he wants to take crosses out of the churches because he said it's an obstacle to bringing religions together. Now, I'm not against destroying crosses. I think that's probably a pretty good thing. But it's his reasoning behind it, that he's trying to unite them together. What exactly drew members of Congress to Moon's coronation, which were 81 congressmen attended, although the number is probably higher? The event was the grand finale of Moon's coast-to-coast, tear-down-the-cross munification tour, intended to remove Christian crosses from almost 300 churches and poor neighborhoods, the idea being that the cross was an obstacle to uniting religions on the Moon. Moon has sunk an estimated $2 to $4 billion into the money-losing Times and countless other causes like Jerry Fordwell's Liberty University. And he's funding all these. I'll tell you exactly what organization he's funding and what they're doing in a second. And this is an article that came out of Salon magazine, and like I said, I'll give everybody a copy. For more than 25 years, Moon sought to surround himself with powerful people to gain credibility and legitimacy, including President Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, George Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush. If the congressman had simply run, then he's called the ambassador for peace. So you could basically look up and you could find all this on there. Now, to me, this is very, very, very worrying, to say the least. Very worrying that here it is, our Congress that's trying to separate church and state, that do not want your child to pray in schools, who don't want the Tenth Commandment plaque, stated that they would literally take a man like this, who took 20,000 people in New York City, in Madison Square Garden, and married them. They never met each other. And coronate him as King Messiah. For what reason? And what I want to know even more than that, because I never trust the politicians to begin with, why on earth is Pat Robinson, Jerry Fordwell, Paul Crouch, and all these other guys supporting this? You know, what is the story with it? Sun Yat-sen's claims include stating that Yeshua failed his mission, and that Moon himself is the new Messiah who is to come to fulfill the mission of Elohim. He also claims that it is his mission to unite the world through uniting religious forces. But would it shock you to know that nearly all the big-name Christian evangelicals have extremely strong ties to him? And I'm going to hand out this article you can take home, including Tim LaHaye, Beverly LaHaye, Paul Crouch, Bill Bright, Robert Schuller, you know, all of them that are in here. Now, here are some of the organizations that Sun Yat-sen is supporting and funding. The American Freedom Coalition, Concerned Women for America, Women's Federation for World Peace, Family Federation for World Peace, National Religious Broadcasters, which include Pat Robinson, Jerry Fordwell, Jimmy Swaggart, Tim LaHaye, Billy Graham, Bill Bright, all of them. So clearly we see here that something wrong is going on. Absolutely something wrong is going on. And the deception has gotten into most of Christianity. And that's why I say this stuff should wake us up, not only to how close we are in the end, but how we really need to pull ourselves away from this stuff. You know, it's time, if we look from Yeshua, going all the way back to Mount Sinai, if Yahweh made a covenant with his people that by the Sabbath you will be known, you know, for all time, this is the covenant I'm going to make with me and my children. If people are not keeping to that covenant, if they're not keeping to his laws, if they're saying the laws now to the cross and they're doing all these evil things in the name of Christianity, we really have to have nothing to do with it. You have to make yourself committees of one and abstain from it. And we're going to be judged, we're going to be looked down upon, but I'm telling you, when you read what's going on here, it is serious. It's very serious. Because like I said, what they've done is they've infiltrated these organizations, they've worked their way up to the top, and all these guys are part of the same plan. And like I said, there's nobody that can tell me that if they're truly worshiping Yeshua in spirit and truth, that they would be involved in this stuff. How on earth could they? Like I said, could a good tree bear bad fruit, or can a bad tree bear good fruit? I'll read one or two more things here. It says, in light of the ties between nearly all Christian evangelicals with Sun Yat-sen, the CIA, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bush family, and Bush Sr.'s New World Order, is it any wonder that after September 11th tragedy, Billy Graham prayed in the name of God and Allah, as dignitaries from many faiths were gathered before him? This prayer would broadcast all the world over. His call for the religious cooperation and unity of all faiths, the trump of Reverend Moon. Now, the Pope that just died, Pope John Paul I, is being quoted as one of the greatest men that ever lived because of what he's done to unify religions. He was the first pope to ever go inside of a mosque. We saw it on TV, almost tripped over himself when he was up there in Syria. And let me just read a couple of quotes what some of these people have said about him. Pat Robinson, okay, who is supposed to be a friend of Israel and stand up, and he seems like a pretty smart guy, right? This is what he said. He said, "I am deeply grieved," said Christian broadcaster Pat Robinson, "at the death of the Pope. He said, John Paul II has been the most beloved religious leader of our age, far surpassing in popular admiration the leader of any faith." He said, "I pray for the cardinals of the Catholic Church that they might have God-given wisdom in selecting the successor to this great man. Their task will not be easy, but with God all things are possible." Robert Chula, "On each occasion I was with him, I felt the compassionate spirit of Christ radiating from his soul." Paul Crouch, he had a willingness to reach out to Christians outside the Roman Catholic faith and unite all faiths into one. He was critical to promoting unity across all religious lines. And on and on and on. We have copies of this we'll hand out. But here it is, and I wonder to myself, I say, the Catholic Church was behind the Holocaust. They were directly involved in killing 6 million Jews. They persecuted true believers and Jews for 1900 years, and now a person who wears the fish hat of the fish god, who bows down and prays to Mary, who bows down to stone images, and calls himself the vicar of Messiah in the place of the Messiah, that Christians around the world, leaders, are going to say he's one of the greatest men that ever lived. Something is wrong. Something is wrong here. And I'm telling you, if you stay asleep, you are going to get pulled into it. It is a very, very, very subtle deception. And I think last night we saw that. Because we saw a man who was here, a good man, who is an honest man, who is getting pulled into something that is going to take him in a real wrong direction if he allows it to. And like I said, it says the beast controls all the earth. And it's not something down the line. It is something that is here. It is something that is going on right now. I'll just get into one or two more things and we'll end here. What about the time frame? What's the time frame of all this? I did a message last feast called Sukkot and the Jubilee, so I'm not going to go over all that as far as the Jubilee year. But I do believe, and again, you can get the tape, that the Jubilee year probably is starting at Yom Kippur in 2014, which means in 2007, we have a seventh year coming next feast, and then we're going into the last seven years. And it's not just like, boom, you know, the millennium comes. That last seven, all these things prophesied happen in that seven. I'll read a scripture that makes me believe that. It is in Ezekiel 40. In Ezekiel 40, verse 1, it says, "In the 25th year of our captivity, in the beginning of the year, in the 10th day of the month, in the 14th year of the city was smitten." If you read this in the Hebrew, it is clearly showing that the year is starting on the 10th day of the month. The only time that the year starts on the 10th day of the month is in the Jubilee. And like I said, there's no ambiguity in the Hebrew in this. Very, very clear. So, on a Jubilee, the year starts at Yom Kippur. That's when the Jubilee, you blow the trumpet, and that starts the year of Jubilee. So clearly this is showing when the Jubilee is. And again, I have a time chart on it, which shows that the Jubilee would come at that year. Now again, the only subjection to this is, what was the 25th year of captivity? And in the paper I had, I gave two scenarios. I gave a scenario of a man who has studied it for many years, and I gave a scenario that the general scenario on both of them. But clearly it looks like the year would be 2014. Another scripture that adds into that, Isaiah 28, which is very interesting. Isaiah 28 and verse 14 through 19. It says, "Wherefore hear the word of Yahweh, you scornful men that rule this people which is in Jerusalem. Because you have said, we have made a covenant with death, and with hell we are in agreement. When the overpassing scourge shall pass you, it shall not come unto us. For we have made lies our refuge, and under falsehood have we hid ourselves. Therefore, thus says Yahweh Elohim, behold, I lay in Zion for a foundation, a stone, a tried, a precious cornerstone. Sure foundation, he that believes shall not make haste. Judgment also will I lay to the line, and righteousness to the plummet. And the hail shall sweep away the refuge of lies, and the water shall overflow the hiding place. and your covenant with death shall be annulled, and your agreement with hell shall not stand. When the overflowing surge shall pass through, then you shall be trodden down. From that time that it goes forth, it shall take you. For morning by morning shall pass over, and by day, and it shall be a vexation only to understand for the report. So, here it's showing, what was this covenant of death? Clearly, I believe it was Oslo. Oslo was a covenant of death. Because if Oslo would have went through according to the way the globalists wanted it, there wouldn't be a state of Israel today. That was the plan of Oslo. It was to make undefensible borders for Israel so they can destroy it. And Yahweh says, no, it's not going to happen. Even though I may have used you as a pawn to set this nation up, you know, the kings of the earth make their plans and Yahweh laughs in the heavens. He says, still you're not going against my plan. I brought my people here and they're here to stay. So Yahweh annulled that covenant of death. Then look at the very next chapter. Look what it says. What happens once they make this covenant of death? He says, woe to Ariel, to Ariel. It's kind of interesting because this is the only time in the Bible that Ariel is used for Jerusalem. You know, and who made this covenant? You know, who's in there now? Ariel Sharon. Woe to Ariel, to Ariel, the city where David dwelt. And year to year, let the feast run their circle. And that's the way it says it in the interlinear. In the King James, it says, and year to year, let them kill sacrifices. And I don't know why they have that in there. I could show you in the interlinear Bible, you'll see it says, let the feast run their circle. Now, what on earth does that mean? Well, if you look at the feast, what do we go by a month? We go by a moon cycle. It's a 19-year cycle, and then it recharges itself. So, very interesting. I said, after I found the scripture, I said, let me look up to see when the moon cycle started and where we are. It's very interesting, but here it is. As soon as Yahweh said, I annul your covenant with death, and now judgment's going to start, and here he says, okay, let the feast run their circle, and then I will camp around you and do all these things. Do you know the moon cycle started the very next year after Oslo? And it's going to end in 2013. I think we're in the 12th year of the 19th year cycle. The day of Yahweh, a day for a year, probably is 1 year, 6 months to a year. And it all fits into line, into that premise. Now again, who knows? I'm not claiming to be a prophet or anything else. I'm not saying all these things. But I can tell you this much. Whether it's 2014 or 15 or 12 or 20, we're not far down there. The time to sleep is over. You know, the parable of the 10 virgins, it's time to wake up. Because any way you look at it, I will most guarantee you the world is going to change in the next couple of years like you never knew it. I have no idea when the return of Yeshua is, and I'm not predicting that. What I am saying is, because of where they already are with this globalist plan and what they're planning in the near future, the world is going to change like you never knew it. There's war coming, and it's not that far down the line. There's going to be major economic woes, and a lot of things are going to happen because they have to make it look like the tribulation passed. And we see all the warning signs of this, absolutely all the warning signs. And you know, what does Daniel say? It says that the wicked will not understand, but the wise will understand. And as believers, what are we doing? We're taking our wares and we're going to all of these people who are not covenant people and listening to them with all these false prophecies and all these things. And that's why we're getting all mixed up. We need to realize that Yahweh gives the Spirit to those that obey Him. And we should be looking for the answers from covenant people. Because I'm telling you, we're in a time now where we're in the wilderness. It's not like before. There's not the Mother Church anymore over us. And we're all out there in the wilderness. Each one of us has to be responsible for ourselves. And we have certain times where we come together, but for the most part, you know, we're out on our own. And if you're out there and you're gleaning, the internet, I think, is the worst thing that ever happened in this world. And I know there's certain good things about it, but I'm telling you, it is the worst thing that ever happened in this world. Besides the filth and the trash and everything else that's on there, and for the world that they're into it, it has brought more heresy into believers than anything else. See, because before, somebody that was a heretic, they would never be allowed up here to listen. Now, all you need is a computer and know how to type. And any heretic out there, there's absolutely millions of websites now. Who are these people? They don't even say who they are or anything. You know nothing about their background. All you know is, you know, I read on the internet. You know, all this information. You know, the parable of the sower and the seed? If you read that very carefully, after he says about where the sower goes, he goes, watch what you hear. That's what Yeshua said. Watch what you hear. Because what goes in is going to be what you remember and how you're going to calculate what you believe. Number one, most of what we believe should just be reading our scriptures. That should be the vast majority of what we're doing. And then, as believers, as we come together and we talk and we discuss, and like this piece, I was talking to Tom, and I was learning some things, and he was learning some things, and we're bouncing off, and that's what we learn from fellow covenant people. But if we're going out to the world, and we're trying to get from them, we're going to get all messed up. And then we're going to bring it in here, and we're going to get more messed up. So we got to make sure two things. We want to make sure that we're not going to the wicked for answers, and we want to make sure, like Thessalonians says, that we're loving the truth. We have to love the truth. And you know something? The people that are fanatical with this stuff, the people that everything, and even on the Sabbath, everything is this, new world order this, new world order this, to hear all this conspiracy. And Yahweh says, don't say conspiracy to everything. And everything is not a conspiracy. It's not what I'm coming here to say today. Those people are just as bad as the people that blind themselves and don't want to know nothing. And there's a lot of them out there. Because they love their life, because things are going good, they don't want to hear anything about this. And the reality of it is, the truth is somewhere in the middle. I think what I brought here tonight, and like I said, the papers, we can hand them out now. Maybe you and David. The information we brought here tonight and the video we showed is proof enough, there's valid proof enough to know these things are true. No doubt 100% Freemasonry is a religion, it's a religion that worships the devil, and no doubt that the most powerful, high-ranking, political, religious, and economic people in our world are part of these organizations. I don't think we need to say anything more than that. So, I'm going to end there, and what I...